Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along show.
Hello and welcome to episode 189. Tonight's show is brought to you by I've seen a lot of things in my life that are pretty, and that's not one of them.
Oh, that's better than your original title.
My original one was Mullet Woes, and Andrea vetoed that one, but I still talked about it because I do what I want.
Well, I mean, mullet can go so many different directions. Like, you could be so creative and witty with that in so many ways, and that just wasn't one of them. I've heard a lot of witty things in my life, and that's not one of them.
Mullet misery. There we go.
All right. So, Matt, what have you been doing this week?
I went out for an e-bike ride with Parker today.
What section of trail did you guys end up riding?
We rode from 285 west until we were overlooking the ponds on Silver Creek Road.
Yeah.
And there was one tree down that we were able to move, one tree down that we could not move, but could break branches off and step over. And then there was, when we got to that point, it was very obvious that you could, we had been through a little bit of snow, a couple of places you couldn't try to ride because they were just very off camber. And yeah, it just, the risk versus reward was very not good. And this ice, this snow is like the consistency of like a snow cone right now. It's,
yep.
It's very, grainy. Very grainy and has no binding to it anymore. And we went up to where you could look down into like Silver Creek Road proper, and we could see an easy 100-150 yards of just snow socked trail still. And it was like, cool, we'll flip around here. So then we
went. That's probably about the spot where I was, whatever it was, like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. So then we descended down to the highway and then pedaled up the other side for a bit and descended back down again.
Cool.
And for those of you that are like, on what trail? It was Rainbow Trail, because Rainbow Trail slaps, and it's one of the only legal places around here to ride e-bikes, especially this early in the season. So that's what we did. And it was probably, since I've ridden the Trek 6-9er, I cannot recall riding another mullet bike on the trail. And I didn't really love it.
So you're talking about the mullet Levo.
Yep.
Got it.
And if you're like, which Levo do you have, Matt? I have an Alloy Gen 3 Levo with the normal GX build. What is that? Just a comp? A Levo comp?
Probably.
Anyways, and the only things that I've changed are, it's a demo bike from the shop. It's my bike for the year. I get to ride it for the entire season. It'll go up for sale with the rest of the shop fleet bikes at the end of the season. And with that, it is my responsibility to return it in good working order. And the one place on a bike, especially an e-bike, in my opinion, that's going to get hammered is the wheels. So
and the crank arm ends.
Yeah, I mean, but cosmetics, like, hey, this thing had pedal strikes is one thing, but like, hey, this tire doesn't fucking stay on the rim anymore is another thing.
I forgot what my
crank
mind.
Length.
Yeah, what crank length is that one?
160.
Oh, damn. That's short.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to try 165s, you might be able to. Can you use the cranks different pattern?
I don't want longer cranks. I had a pedal strike that was so ferocious today that it unclipped me and knocked my foot most of the way out of my shoe.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, it was serious.
Yeah, it happens on those things.
Mm-hmm.
You're just pedaling through rocks. Because you can't stop pedaling.
You can't stop pedaling. And the rear tire just wants to hang up on everything.
Well, yeah, you got that going for you, too, on the mullet.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm a fan of it. And it's a bummer because in some places the bike is real active and real fun. And in other places it just, I don't know how else to describe it. Like, I'm riding a stump jumper, right? So it's not like I'm riding a Forbidden or some weird axle path bike, you know, and then I'm hopping on a Levo and be like, this suspension sucks. But I actually just, I'm going to say I hate the wheels. Like, I like the way my Stumpy rides, and I've never had this sensation on my Stumpy, and now I felt it multiple times on the Levo, and in theory, the Levo should hang up less because it's a heavier bike, and it has more momentum when you're descending, fully hauling the mail.
What size rear tire are you running?
That might be a little bit of my problem.
Oh, here it comes.
But with that said, I'm still running a 2.4.
Okay, that's too small.
Okay, it came out of the trash, so fuck me.
I'm running a Python 1.9. I don't know why it's shitty.
No, I mean...
No, but, I've ridden, so...
Let but me I mean, the ultimate diameter isn't going to change that much more when I go back to a 2.6.
You're right, it's not a humongous difference, but I think if you put a 2.5, 2.6 on there, it will be a nice little improvement.
Yeah, but that doesn't help when you hit something like... I understand it's going to help in some ways, but when the tire hits something and just fucking stops... That's a diameter problem, not a tread or width problem, you know?
Yeah, and I had the same thoughts. Like, Matt told me a little bit more about where he liked it and where he didn't, and drew me a nice diagram. And it very much tracked with my experience on a full 27.5 bike that was also a long travel bike, where riding it on, it's, you know, just not e-bikes, but riding it on smooth, flowy stuff with like rollers and berms and not necessarily a flow trail, but you know, a smoother trail with some flow trail characteristics. It was awesome. I was like, man, this bike is so fucking fast on this. And then I took the same bike to Greens Creek, which is just all rocks all the time. And I absolutely hated it because the rear wheel would just fucking stop. You would just fucking stop, be hauling into a rock garden, and then you'd be going 2 miles an hour on the other side of it. And you're like, I'm normally going way faster than this on a 29-inch bike. So, yeah, I mean, it makes sense in some places, but I don't know. For the riding around here, I don't think that the smaller rear wheel makes sense. It's probably awesome in a lot of places. Like, I bet in Memphis, a mullet bike would be fucking amazing. I mean, even at like Sillamo or something where it's more kind of like smaller rocks, unless it's like one big rock that you have to like make it over. Be fun there.
It'll be interesting to see where it ends up. One small other little disadvantage is the derailleur hangs down so much lower on a mullet bike now that we have these giant 52s. So it's just one more thing to hit shit.
Yep.
Yeah. And
but I want to like mullets. I really do. I think it might be going in semi the right direction. But I don't know. It's interesting to see where this one's going to go and how it's going to play out. Specialized and a whole lot of other people have really embraced it.
What we really need is like a 28.25 for the rear and 29 up front.
I'm going to say optimum in the rear is 28.42.
I think it needs to be about a, it probably should be about a 1-inch difference between the two. I know that sounds super nitpicky, but that's probably where it needs to end up.
Well, hold on. And then the front needs to be a 30.69.
All right. Yeah.
What's really confusing is the chainstay length is the same between the two bikes. Wait, why can't I just jam a fucking 29er in the back of this thing, Kenny? What's going to stop me from doing that?
It won't fit.
The rear linkage, maybe?
You know, like it's... What's... because it's bigger, no fit.
The chainstay links are the same. I guess the motor hangs down and eats up some of that room or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder if someone's makes a link, like a cascade situation or something weird you could do. But I guess not, because that lower arm slash linkage, your chainstay, that is... the length that it is, and it's basically connected to the motor, so I can't imagine what you could do to get more clearance there.
Wouldn't it be also a problem with like the at the seat stay? It looks
I
like
can just rub
it's
a
got
bit.
A bridge there.
There's
a ton of room up there.
Okay,
I'm gonna do it tomorrow. I'm just
all
gonna
right,
do
great.
It.
Maybe we will see a 1.9 Python on there.
I do have a 2.0 Maxxis Pace.
I don't even know what that is.
That's probably a good thing.
Yeah, your life is better for not knowing what it is, Ken. Also, tires that I took out of the trash. So,
why are you bringing home tires you took out of the trash?
It's a long story.
We go around tomorrow with side cutters.
I'll cut a hole in your trap. So, yeah, that's really all the stuff of note I have to talk about this week is I just worked and... went for a bike ride And yeah, I don't know how else to put this. Like, it was a really hard ride. One, I'm not very fit. And two, I had to ride everything because I had an e-bike. So there was no reason not to ride. Like, I never had this situation where, like, I was like, oh, there's an uphill rock garden. I'll just get off now. It was more just like, oh, there's an uphill rock garden. I better put it in turbo and get to hauling ass before I get there.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any of the situation that I've had where it's like too many watts and you spin your tire and stall out?
I don't want this to come across like cocky or anything. I think my moto experience makes that easier for me to overcome.
Yeah, probably.
Because I'm expecting the spin, if that makes sense. I don't know how to put it.
For me, it was like I get halfway up the rock and then start to spin and would end up like spinning and rolling back down to where I'd started.
And I think that's where I'm using a little bit more like of my techie, how would I ride this if I wasn't on an e-bike, and kind of like moving the bike a little bit, like stopping the pedal because I've like pedaled into it. And I've carried momentum sort of like you would on trials bike or something. And then I'm sort of like body Englishing the rest.
Yeah. I don't have as much body to English with.
I've got plenty of body to English with these days. So that's my week.
Kenny, what'd you do?
I rode double moto. So on Saturday, I rode the Ultra and did some techie stuff that I hadn't in some places I hadn't been before. And it was really fun. The motorcycle was really good. And then on Sunday, I did a long kind of dual sport ride in a very similar area, but I rode from my house and I rode to a place called Lake Mountain. And I rode over this like, it's like an antenna road essentially. So there's a bunch of cell towers and stuff at the top of this mountain. And there's just a road that goes up and down it. It's pretty steep. I think it's 2,500 feet of climbing. Just like straight up this gravel road, straight down the other side, and then rode some deserty stuff, found a bunch of single track, rode some other techie stuff. So it was a fun mix of like, it was road and then it was steep gravel that was loose. And then it was like fast desert stuff, like 90 mile an hour type stuff. And then,
did you actually go 90 miles an hour?
Yeah, I went 90.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's not that big a deal.
I'm so glad that my moto doesn't go that fast.
I mean, that's as fast as mine really goes, gearing wise. It probably has the power to do 100, 110, but yeah, that's definitely all the gear that it has. But on a big old flat, like smooth graded gravel road, I wouldn't even call it a gravel road. It's almost like blue dirt, essentially, if that makes sense. It's almost a street, pretty much. And there's just nothing out there. So you can like see if there was like an animal or whatever, like it's just dead flat, dead straight. So not that scary. But anyway, had some of that. And then rode out to a town called Eureka, which is an old mining town. I drive through there all the time to ride motos in a place called Cherry Creek. But anyway, it ended up being a 100-mile ride, about 50 miles out and back pretty much. Stopped in that little town, got some gas, and sat down at a little restaurant that I'd never eaten at before. It's nothing like special, but just a nice little restaurant. And everybody that was working there was super nice. And the weather was like amazing.
Isn't that always good?
Yeah, it was just fun. Like they were talking about how they were going to get some concrete poured, hopefully in the next couple of days to get their porch put on. And it's like a relatively new building. And she,
big news.
Yeah, this lady was super happy to talk about that. And she was super nice and checked on me a bunch, but I didn't need a whole lot of, you know, tending to with a burger
and
fries.
Did she call you honey?
I don't remember. I don't think so.
I think that's a very Southern thing is the waitress. Like if you're by yourself and, you know, you're like chatting with them, they'll check on you and be like, honey, are you okay?
Yeah.
Honey, do you need anything?
Yeah, I don't think I got any of that, but definitely have experienced that in the South. But it was a fun ride. It was a good time. Dual sporting is pretty cool because it's a mix of everything. I could roll straight from the garage and yeah, you can go super fast. You can do like ultra techie stuff. You can do dual tracky stuff. Yeah, And I could have ridden a whole lot longer, but I was kind of running out of day. So we're going to do a similar ride to that with a group of other people, I think, this weekend. So that'll be fun. What else has been going on in my world?
Unless their cats have birthdays.
There is one. Actually, there was one cat birthday where they had to bail. So not kidding. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
All right.
Andrea?
Well, we actually had a listener that emailed in and said, since I'm not doing chicken nuggets anymore, that I should give updates on my plants that I'm planting. I will give you a chicken nugget. All the chickens are doing fine. The two babies that were born last, oh gosh, I think it was.
Do you mostly eat your chickens or you're mostly getting eggs?
Oh, well, I have 7 hens that are laying hens, and then a rooster who is like their, I don't know. I don't want to say he's the boss. The roosters are very, they're very multi-purpose. If you find a good one, they will protect the hens, not only from predators, but from each other. Like, so hens will like squabble with each other, and there's always kind of a
bitches
boss.
Be fighting.
Yeah, bitches be fighting. And he will break the fights up. Like, he will run over and just kind of like put his big ass. He's a blue Cochin. And if you know anything about chickens, that's a large, fluffy breed of chicken. He's pretty laid back. He's never like even looked at me sideways, and he's pretty slow for a chicken. So a lot of times I can just like walk by him and pick him up. He doesn't like it, but I did have to trim his spurs back a few weeks ago. I've been letting the chickens kind of free range out in the yard whenever I'm around and close by, because we do have we have hawks, and generally what would happen, and this is how I lost my last rooster, is it was before we had a lot of like netting and stuff over the chicken yard. A hawk probably tried to grab one of the hens. You know, it may have been after him, may have been after a hen. It doesn't matter. But he got in a fight with the hawk because there were rooster feathers and hawk feathers in the yard. Like it was not just a straight up like he got like there was a struggle there, but the hawk won. But now I've got boots, and if I'm around and I can hear them, like kind of like if I hear them squawk, cause they make a lot of noise if they get scared of something, I can run out there and chase off whatever is after them. And the bears are out now, so they won't get to do that quite as much. But yeah, they've been pecking around in the yard. But yeah, I've got 7 laying hens. I've got boots, and every year I get a batch of meat chickens, and typically those grow a lot faster. Like they're almost full size at like 8 to 10 weeks old. And a regular chicken, it's going to be 12 to 14 weeks before they're full sized. And so I get a batch of those every year, and we process them and put them in the freezer and eat chicken for the rest of the year. And it is way better than store-bought chicken. Like, so much better in every way. It tastes better. Like, the texture is better. Like, if you look on your package of store-bought chicken, you'll see something that's, like, contains whatever percent, I don't know, like, seasoned water or salt water. Basically, when they process a chicken at the factory, they toss them in kind of a brine, and the meat kind of soaks it up. So a lot of what you pay for with your chicken from the store is just water that's going to cook out of your meat. And, you know, I do put mine in water to cool them off when I process them, but they're in there for like 3 hours, not for however long it takes them to chill and soak up water in the factory. So I'll stop ranting about chickens now. But the chickens are all good. And what else has been going on? Oh, yeah, and the plants, the ones that I planted last. Yeah, this is the most exciting part of my week. My plants that I planted last week are sprouting. So that's pretty cool. Got little sprouts. They're about an inch tall. And today I had a couple of game cameras on these little springs that are in a really dry area, just to kind of see what kind of animals came around. I was originally looking for turkeys. Oh, yeah, I can talk about that, too. For once, I'm going to be the person that talks the most about what I've been doing. I had game cameras out, and when I got to one of them, I'm like, man, it's kind of turned sideways. I guess the wind got, like, pretty crazy out here. And this is, like, probably 6 feet up in a tree, like on a trunk, tree trunk. And
how did you reach it?
I'm 5'6". My arms can reach up to 6 feet.
Okay.
I can reach the top of your head when I'm standing flat-footed on the ground, and you're 6'2", okay? But...
all right.
It was, like, kind of cocked to the side a little bit, and I was looking through the photos, and I was like, what is that? Like, there was something in front of the camera, and then I scrolled to the next photo, and there's a fucking an eyeball of a bear looking at my camera. And then the next photo is, like, a perfect little bear ear. And... one of the other cameras actually got a full body shot of the bear, and he like came and laid down in the water and was doing bear stuff. He's big, big and fat. Like, I don't know how a bear can wake up in the springtime and be that fat. It looked like a fall picture of a bear because he was chunk, super chunk.
I assume they're just but, black bears?
Yeah, this was a brown colored a brown phase, I guess, is what you would call him, black bear. Yeah, they're like giant raccoons. We've talked about it before. They're not really dangerous.
Yeah, they seem to like be. They seem to be fairly harmless. I think unless you really, really are in an unlucky situation, yeah, or really startle them, or they got, you know, cubs or whatever. Yeah, they're probably not that interested in you.
Yeah, the cubs are the thing you got to watch out for. You don't want to fuck with cubs because mama bears are not something to fuck with of any species. But any species of bear. But yeah, I hunted. So opening day of turkey season was Sunday. Today's Thursday when we're recording. And the night before that, there were some guys camped next to me. I just camped out, even though I was turkey hunting, I don't know, like 15 or 20 minutes from the house. I just wanted to camp out the night before because I was excited. And it's just easier to get going in the morning if you're like in the car or the truck with like everything right there, coffee and breakfast and whatnot. So these guys were camped next to me, and they'd been kind of back in the area where I wanted to hunt. And they're like, and we were just talking about, you know, where we were going to go in the morning. And they're like, is that your little ground blind in whatever spot? And I was like, yeah, that's mine. And one of the guys is like, so I shot my first turkey just like a little ways up from there 7 years ago. So do you mind if I hunt like in that spot tomorrow? And they're like 200 to 300 yards away, and that's not really a big deal. Like, I don't know. I wasn't going to tell the guy no, because one, it's public land. I mean, if he wanted to hunt like in the same meadow as me, it'd be a dick move, but legally you're allowed to do it. So
and legally you're allowed to have a hunting accident.
But around, I guess it was about 8 a.m. It'd been super quiet. Around 8 a.m., I hear just like the most far away gobble you can possibly hear, just out of the blue. It wasn't in response to my call or anything. And usually if I'm sitting in a blind or just sitting and waiting for turkeys in an area, I'll call about every 10 minutes. But, you know, I answered the call, didn't hear anything back. It's like a game of Marco Polo. That's how you can think of it. Like, you say something, then they say something, and then, you know, you try to find each other. But I was just sitting in a ground blind. And then I call, I don't know, like probably 15 or 20 minutes later, and this turkey answers from like just downstream of where I am. So I'm closer to the turkey than him, than the dude who's like, you know, 300 yards away from me. And he's far enough away, I can't even hear him calling turkey. So yeah, that's how far away we were. And this turkey gets up on the ridge line behind me and walks behind me. But, you know, he can't see me just because of trees and brush and whatnot. And I think he came down off of the ridge line exactly in between me and the dude who was hunting up from me. And he just liked the other guy's call better and just went that way. And a few minutes later, I just hear boom. And I'm like, oh, man, I got my turkey. I mean, I wasn't mad. I was slightly disappointed at most, but I kind of gave it a few minutes because, I mean, turkeys are tough birds.
Foreshadowing.
You know, I didn't want to like run in there and him be like trying to chase the turkey and like shoot it while it's running or whatever and like walk into that. So I gave it a few minutes, kind of gathered my stuff up and walked up there. And yeah, sure enough, he shot a really nice turkey. And he was like so fucking happy because, you know, he got his first turkey there and then hadn't been there for 7 years and then came back and got another turkey on opening day. I mean, yeah, he was stoked. So I was happy for him. Took his picture. And then the next day, I went back to the same spot because there are lots of turkeys out there. Went back to the same spot, but it was real quiet. Kind of hiked around for a while. Still pretty quiet. So I decided to go to a different place and get in the truck and check out one spot. Didn't hear anything. Drive up the road. And it was kind of hot. And it was like, I don't know, middle of the afternoon. It was like the hottest part of the day. So I'm like, well, I'm going to drive up higher. And I parked at this spot where I've actually found morel mushrooms kind of early in the mushroom season. And I really wanted to just go up there. I've never been able, like I've seen turkeys in that area and I've heard them, but I've never been able to call one into that area because lots of people hunt there and they're super suspicious. So I go up there really just thinking I'm going to look for mushrooms. And I'm kind of in the mushroom area. I'm like, well, while I'm kind of looking in here, I'm going to call. I call and I hear this bird, like this gobble off in the distance. He's pretty far away. I'm like, cool. I'll kind of head that direction. And I keep walking up to kind of where this hill crests above like a big meadow. And I hadn't heard any other gobbles or anything. And I'd called a little bit. And I just happened to look down and I see a couple of turkeys like just entering this meadow, maybe 100 yards away from me. I'm like, shit, because turkeys have really good eyesight, like hawk quality eyesight. And so I just like lower down to the ground and I kind of peek over the hill and they're just kind of poking along out into this meadow. And I had to crawl to a bush and I called. And I see these turkeys kind of heading my direction, but kind of from where I was, I couldn't see if there was a male turkey, like a tom with them. And that's all you're allowed to shoot in the springtime. You have to shoot a bearded turkey. And I call and here they come over the little top of the hill and they're literally like 10 feet away from me. And I'm like barely even breathing at this point because I'm afraid they're going to see me and run off. Two hens pass by and I'm like, I think I might have seen three turkeys. So I kind of just raise my gun up really slowly and wait for like the third turkey in case it's a male turkey. And sure enough, it was. But I kind of had to like, this is like super, super close. And I kind of had to like turn awkward and he's really close and I shot and I hit him and he kind of like flopped onto the ground. And I'm like, awesome. And I get up and like take a few steps towards him and he gets up and starts to run. And I immediately just like jerk my gun up and like shoot again, but he's still really close because he just kind of got up and ran. And so when you turkey hunt, you use a choke on your shotgun that makes all of the pellets, very close together. And mine works really well at like the 30 yard range, at 10 feet. They're probably like, I don't know, in about a 6-inch diameter circle. So I kind of missed him the second time and he still like awkward runs off a little bit and I let him get a little bit of distance and I just do a better job of aiming and I got him like all the way on the third shot. So I got my turkey and now I'm just scouting other turkey spots that I've always wondered if turkeys are there. But it's going to snow tomorrow and Saturday.
Yep.
Yeah. So I'm just going to bake bread and look at my plants. I talked for a long time. You guys just have to talk the rest of the show because I'm done. My voice is going.
Okay.
I know there's a lot of new shit, but we also didn't do listener questions last week.
Well, let's just run through this real quick.
Okay.
I have a couple of quickies. I'm sure that if you've been riding for a very long time, you've shopped at Nash Bar or Bike Nash Bar. And Arnie Nash Bar, the founder, he passed away this week, which, I mean, I bought shit from Nash Bar. Everybody did in the early 2000s for sure.
I bought stuff to date myself. I bought stuff from Nash Bar in like 95, 96.
Did they have a paper catalog then?
Oh, 100%. I got it from a... Yeah, I used to get those catalogs because it was awesome. You could just look through there and they had their own branded stuff as well, which is pretty cool. They had like shoes and clothing and that kind of stuff. And it was half the price of everyone else's. So they were really...
I think I had some Nash Bar shorts.
I had some Nash Bar clipless shoes. They were not great, but they were cheap. And that's what I could afford at the time. But it was cool. It was neat to get catalogs and just look through stuff.
Yeah, so he applied his design skills to the catalog, which eventually was mailed to 14 million cyclists a year in the U.S. and Canada.
I was one of them.
At its peak, it employed over 350 people and shipped 6,000 packages a day. So,
what is Nash Bar today?
Is Nash Bar still around?
What happened?
What's Nash Bar today?
Well, Bike Nash Bar was, and I'm just learning this all from this article on Bicycle Retailer, but in 2000, Nash Bar was purchased by Performance, and it's now been acquired by some other private equity or whatever.
Do you think it still belongs to Performance? Do you think it's like a backcountry competitive cyclist thing where it's really the same exact company, but they inexplicably have two websites with the exact same things on them?
No, I think that if I had to, I don't know. I think they serve different niches.
I'm on Nash Bar now. I'm just kind of clicking around. I wonder if they have like some about us store locations. Okay. Wait, what? Performance Bicycle Chico Store. A-Main.
Well,
oh,
they're owned
interesting.
By the same people.
You've heard of A-Main Sports and Hobbies, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there must be some relationship with A-Main.
Well, that's who bought them when Performance went out of business.
Oh, okay.
We're going to go through this quickly.
Okay, so talking about things being acquired by private equity, Revel Bikes closed today.
Were they acquired by private equity?
They were owned by private equity for the last few years. The founder was no longer a part of it. And they owe more than $8 million to the bank, and the company is now in an orderly wind down. It is unlikely to be any remaining funds to pay unsecured creditors, which that would be, I'm not sure, I'm going to keep my mouth closed. A gift card would be an unsecured debt. So I don't know what else would be an unsecured creditor, but starting tomorrow, which will be Friday, bikes will be discounted 40 to 50% at retailers. Dealers who want any new products will get a 10% margin at the new prices with no terms. Warranty support has ended.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
Yeah, that sucks. I mean, the thing about that, there's a lot of topics here. We don't need to get too deep into the weeds here. But I guess first and foremost, whenever we hear about this kind of stuff, it's important to understand. Like, let's say you had a bad experience with Revel or something like that. I don't hear a whole lot of that stuff about Revel. But you know, you got to imagine there are real people behind this who have probably molded their lives in some way to like work for this company, and now they can no longer do that. And that's really shitty, right? And we got to remember the bike industry is not that big. So these are just real people's lives who are impacted. That's all I have to say.
No, I mean, it's just, for me, the big takeaway is private equity.
Oh, does private equity
just throw their...
Yeah, does private equity ruin everything? Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, they can just get bored and throw their toys away.
That's correct.
Because, oh, I did this math once. Don't correct me if I'm wrong. But like at one point, you know, it was public knowledge that, you know, the Pros Closet got like $40 million worth of funding. And I just remember being like, wow, if I had $40 million... And I made a meager like 5% a year, which probably wouldn't be too difficult, right? Just like just a very safe investment. That's like $200,000 a year.
Yeah, there's weird stuff that people do. And I think owning a business is not necessarily a bad thing, but it's very different. If you owned a medium-sized IBD with multiple locations and you put all your time and effort and money into that, and you didn't really worry about other stuff, and you've been getting a very consistent return on that every single year, and you are directly responsible for how it does, then investing more money in that, reinvesting into it, is probably not a terrible decision. Like, could it come to an end at any point? Yeah, I guess so. But at some point, you have paid off all your stuff. Like, you have real assets, you have real property. That's a reasonable thing to do. But buying someone else's half-baked thing and then expecting to turn around and make double the money the next day, like, it does happen. And that's why people do it. But damn, like, man, private equity just, it ruins a lot of shit. It just puts everything under the magnifying glass, essentially. And if you don't grow insanely fast and make it sustainable, then you're fucked. And most of the time, you're fucked.
Yep. So, since we have listener questions to get to, Kona released a new Hey Hey. It's the 10th version. It is essentially an Epic Evo. And the thing that really makes me chuckle is the reviewer, I think it's Steve. Yeah, Steve over at Bike Rumor. His weighed 30.65 pounds with pedals and no cages.
And what?
That's a lot of bike.
What type of bike is
that? For 120, 130.
Oh, 120, 130. Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that bike really needs to be, 28, 29 for sure. 30s, that's tough. That's tough.
Yeah, I mean, I had my Stump Jumper with bird wheels at 31 pounds.
Oh, it's got a pike on it.
In extra large.
If you put that new 34 step cast on there, you might take a pound off.
Yeah, my Stumpy at 130, 140 was 26 with pedals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was a weird fringe case, but not that unobtainable. Like, there's, for $2,000 less dollars, that bike could have been 28 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Zero issue.
And then, I mean, I don't really have anything else to say about it.
Is there anything different about it that?
I mean, it holds two bottles now. I mean, they just made it a modern downcountry bike.
All right.
That's the only way to put it. But I will say, with this weight, with a pike fork on it, this is more of a competitor for a tall boy than it is a competitor for a, like an Epic Evo, even though it holds two bottles. That's just like my opinion, man.
That's what this whole show is. With chicken facts.
We want to talk about Liat, the protection company. They released pedals and bars and stem.
I'm about sick of companies making multi-tools, pedals, and the other shit they do. We have too many goddamn pedals in the ecosystem. Can we stop making flat pedals, guys?
Well, hold on. If a company makes shin guards and pedals, they're really knocking it out of the park. Because you buy their pedals, and then you fuck up your shin, and then you buy their shin guards.
I guess
they can make those spikes extra sharp.
I guess
be like, these are only supposed to be used if you're using our shin guards.
I glanced at that news in the periphery. I don't even know what they are. I'm just making an assumption here, but we do not need another set of $50 to $60 composite pedals. Like, we just don't. Are they different than that? Are they like aluminum and really expensive or something?
Yeah, they're aluminum and they're really expensive, and they have some made out of magnesium and some with tie axles. And
also,
they started making clipless pedals.
Who buys expensive flat pedals these days anymore? I mean, why wouldn't you just buy a really nice set of $60 composites, run them for a season or two until they're clapped, and throw them out? You ever tried to get a pin out of one of those things? It's like, oh, get me on a rant about open ball bearing hubs. They're rebuildable. Okay, great, but they're fucking hammered by the time you need to rebuild them, and then you can't, and then they're garbage. You literally throw them away. Same thing with replaceable pins and pedals. I'm not saying you shouldn't have replaceable pins, but using that as a marketing thing, like, oh, yeah, of course you can rebuild it. Every single person I've seen try to replace their pins, it's because they're smashed over and stuff, and you can't even get the damn things out. You're just going to throw the pedals away.
And I'll interject here. I'm going to give you the sales pitch that probably isn't – it might be applicable for you, but what I tell people is, yeah, you can buy this – $150 pedal that has replaceable pins and rebuildable and all this fancy stuff. I was like, or you can buy this $60 pair of pedals, and when they get hammered, you can either put them on your town bike or give them to a kid in the neighborhood with worse pedals or throw them away. And you don't have to do anything except screw two new pedals in and throw these on, like, in your garage and give them to somebody that needs them more, whether it's your bike or something else.
Exactly. And I just say that. Exactly. Could not have said it better.
I really try to pitch this isn't going in the trash as much as because think about it. You have, like, your green machine has pedals on it, and you could put your old flats on there. And then there's going to be some kid in your neighborhood who's riding some old Trek 4300 and half the pedals missing. And you're like, hey, buddy, come here for a minute. Let me set you up some new pedals.
I got some candy.
You want some candy?
Have a good week, man.
I got some pedals in my van.
I mean, but really, like, you know, but I'm just saying, like, there's that kid always, like, out in the neighborhood, and you kind of, like, know him. You know what I mean? Like,
I know
there's always
mean.
A place.
I know what you mean. This is not, I'm not trying to throw shit in a landfill. I'm just being a realist, and I would rather save my money, is what I'm saying.
No, I'm 100% with you. So, there you go.
I got two new things that I like.
All right.
Abby Tools is making some bike shop tools. So everyone knows Abby Tools makes, like, really lightweight titanium stuff.
Well, they've made plenty of shop tools over the years.
Well, they've made tools that are geared towards mechanics that need to, like, pack all of their shit and carry it around. Now they're making some tools that are for, like, the brick and mortar store. So they have the shop whip it and the shop Crombie tool. So it's basically the chain whip and the free hub, or the lock ring tool. And they're just made out of just plain, you know, steel. They're fully heat treated. I like that they have magnets on the end.
How does that shit work?
How does that shit work? Like, the chain whip has a magnet on it so that the chain stays magneted to the handle of the tool, like, when it's hung up. I like that. I like that it has a big hole where it can hang on a pegboard.
But that means you can't use a titanium chain.
That's true.
That's bullshit.
But it uses a KMC 10-speed chain, which is compatible with 7 through 13-speed drivetrains. I like the magnet, and I've used a chain whip with a magnet on it before, and I really like it because once you get the hang of it, you can kind of, like, slap it on the cassette just right with a little bit of momentum from the weight of the magnet, and it will just wrap around and magnet itself onto the cassette in the right spot. That is a very satisfying feeling. I like that. And then, you know, the Crombie tool is just cool because it's got a lock ring remover that has the big, like, through axle guide pin on one side, and then it's open on the other side. And I think it's cool. I think these are both really cool things, and they're $65 each.
No,
which
very,
I think is
very
reasonable for a
price, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, for a high-end tool that, you know, the fucking chain pins aren't going to break out of it if you put a little bit of torque on it. And yeah. They're also making a spoke wrench, but I don't like the wraparound, like, three-sided spoke wrenches. They're a pain in the ass to use. They're nice to have in case you have a nipple that wants to, like, strip out. I like them in that situation.
You're saying you don't like that SD spoke wrench? You don't like that?
No.
Are you crazy?
I think it's a useful thing to have if you need it. But if you're just truing a normal wheel that has brass nipples that are in decent condition, you don't fucking need that.
Oh, that's terrible. Every time I use a park tool, like one of those wire ones, if you're building wheels all day, those things freaking blow. I will just throw those on the ground out of rage. They're terrible. I use those SD ones are sick. And I usually use the DT one with, like, the big all wings on it, and it wraps around, like, 3/4 of the way.
Okay, but maybe if you're building wheels, that's nicer. But I'm just saying, for, like, I just need to throw
If you're just building rock hoppers all day, the park one is really handy.
Yeah, like, if I'm just truing the wheel off of, like, a new bike out of the box, then I just need, like, the quick one. I just want the fast one. I want to just throw it on there and not have to worry about, like, getting it clocked just right. And I don't know. The three-side ones are a pain in the ass. They have their place, but That place is not in my hands.
Well, I disagree, but we're allowed to do that.
And the other thing that I thought was cool was the Praxis gearbox. It's in full prototype right now, but it sounds like they have some very reasonable. They're looking for, you know, maybe bike brands that want to build a bike around this gearbox. It will shift under full load, like full on pedaling mode load. You don't have to lighten your pedal stroke. You don't have to stop pedaling. It looks like it is electronic. I think I read that in here somewhere. But yeah, I mean, it looks cool. My first thought was when I looked at it, that is a fuck ton of parts. But they said, you know, if they do have a bike brand that wants to invest in it, then they could reduce the size of the whole gearbox. They can reduce the number of parts that's in it. Basically make it better than it even looks right now. So I think it looks cool, and I hope that we see some of it out there.
I only have one request before Kenny's thoughts, because mine is simple. Everybody thought UDH was stupid, but it's fucking sick, because you just slap a fucking hanger in a fucking bike, and boom, you have the right hanger in stock. The thing I really want to see out of the industry in the next 15 years, because I know gearboxes are going to be a thing, I want UGBM, Universal Gearbox Mount. I want them all to go into the same place.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the first stab at it's probably just not going to take, right? Like, it's just how it's going to be.
Yeah. So kind of along what Matt was saying, the output of the gearbox can be in different locations. So like you would have the same gearbox, but like the output, depending on your frame design, can be in different spots. Like if you had a high pivot bike, it could be in one spot. If you had a hardtail, it could be in another spot. So yeah, I think it looks cool. You know, I hope someone picks it up and they make the full, you know, nicer version that they want to make. But I like it. New shit that I don't hate.
All right, what's next?
Do we want to do... Well, Kenny,
absolutely.
Is there anything you...
I don't want to talk about what you're looking at.
Okay.
Well, I mean, to finish out Abby, we've talked about it before, but don't anyone ever buy the titanium hammer, because it's not a hammer. It does not work. Other than that, generally speaking, I think Abby makes some pretty cool stuff and they have a lot of innovation. So definitely not bagging on Abby. I think they make good stuff. But in particular, I've used that titanium hammer and it is ridiculous.
I mean, it's not made for just wailing on stuff. It's for just like...
Well, that's why you need a fucking hammer.
What Kenny's talking,
I'm just going to use I'd be better off using a 5mm Allen wrench and just smacking it against whatever I have than this titanium hammer.
I think what Kenny's talking about is the Abby hammer doesn't have a good hand feel. Like, it doesn't want to swing like a hammer.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because it weighs 200 grams. A hammer has to have weight to it.
I have a different tie hammer from Rollingdale, think. And it is heavier, but it's like I've held the Abby one and that one at the same time in Troy's garage. And like the Abby one doesn't, I don't think it's as much the weight, Kenny, as the weight's not in the... They made it light by not putting weight where they need it, which is in the head, because the handle weighs more than it. Like, they couldn't make the handle lighter, but they made the head lighter, which made it a shitty hammer. Because I have even smaller, lighter hammers than that, and they swing better because they're balanced right.
Yeah, I think you'd be better off with one of those, like, if you bought a kid's workbench set or something, like a Playtel one with a plastic hammer. I think you'd be better off with that.
In all seriousness, Harbor Freight has a $3 hammer that is this tiny little stubby hammer.
Oh, I own that one. It's amazing. It's like a 4-incher.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's like a normal claw hammer on the end.
Something like that. I don't know. Maybe it's a ball peen or something. But regardless, it's like actually useful.
Yeah, the Abby hammer, the problem is the weight distribution, not the ultimate weight itself.
Yeah, well, there you go. So anyway, other than that, I think Abby makes some pretty neato stuff.
All right, what else we got?
We should probably maybe do one more thing, and then we should probably do listener questions, because we've been recording for almost an hour.
We have just one new listener question. Because I answered one. Like, there was a listener question saying, since there's no more chicken nuggets, talk about seeds, and I did that. So there's really just one real question.
Okay. Well, I'm going to talk about a bike thing. We may have discussed this on a previous episode because this was in January, but it popped up somewhere again on one of my feeds, and I just didn't pay attention to it when we talked about it. So let me know if we already talked about this one. I can't even pronounce it, so it's not going to help. Zocelli Vasoco. It's the two chain high pivot bike, and the first chain is like hidden in the seat tube. Did we talk about that one? You use e-bike cranks? We did. Okay. Because the rear shock looked familiar, that maybe we talked about it, but maybe I was sleeping at the time.
I don't remember talking about it, but I don't remember much.
Yeah. And maybe I was cranky about it at first, but the more I looked at it, I thought it was actually kind of neat. Maybe it's a way to have a less goofy, well, maybe it's not less goofy. I don't know. It just seemed kind of cool. So kind of the weird, it's not really a gearbox, but it's got some gearbox vibes. I don't know. Kind of cool. It's just weird. So if you're bored, go look at that thing. It's crazy. If you just look up two chain high pivot bike, you'll find it.
It is Zocelli Vasoco. Oh my God. And it is a 170 rear. Recommended fork travel is 180 to 200.
That's a big
Jesus
bitch.
Christ.
Hey, I'm pretty happy with my Kinevo SL, and mine is reverse travel though. So I'm 170, 180 on the back.
Here's my favorite thing about Zocelli here, which is when you click on tech specs, it gives us the frame travel, recommended fork travel. It gives us two shock sizes, 230 by 65 for 170, 230 by 60 for 160. It tells us the bushing sizes, the headset size, the seat post clamp, the bottom bracket, the crank set, the brake mounts, the rear hub, and the maximum tire width. And it gives us all this at the top of the, like...
Yeah, that's a very simple website. I wish that we've said this before. Bike manufacturers should have like
Marketing people are no longer allowed to be in charge of the website. Like, you kick them out of the fucking room and let the engineers build the damn website.
So you should have that choice. Do you want?
Oh my God, I'm going to go broke. You can get this motherfucker chrome plated. You could have a chrome plated full suspension mountain bike. Jesus Christ, where's my credit card?
You should go to the company website and have the choices right when you get, like, the landing page should be, give me the simple shit or I want to see pretty pictures.
You know what else I kind of like is on this bike, it just has a GX mechanical drivetrain, which is like perfectly reasonable. Yeah. Anyway, it'd be fun to go back in time because I'm sure maybe we shit on it at the time. We're like, that's so stupid. There's so many linkages and dingle hoppers and stuff. But surprisingly enough, I'm not saying it's not fiddly and who knows how all the bearings and bushings and stuff work as far as longevity, but it's like, it's got a semi-clean aesthetic going on. It's kind of cool. Anyway, that's it. Kind of neat thing to semi-revisit. So that's all I got.
Well, speaking of revisiting, our listener question of the week from Mark
I got one more. I'm sorry.
Messed up my segue.
Ah, shit.
I never make good segue.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what.
It was perfect.
Finish out that segue, and I'll come back to this one. I'll segue into my segue.
Yeah, you got to think of a segue to get from this to whatever you want to talk about.
Okay, continue.
So our listener question from Mark wants to revisit the LOL Katana. He says, it's definitively not for me, as I damaged one derailleur in 35 years, but two things about it that are less discussed but might be very beneficial. One, the clutch is not a friction device, but a hydraulic damper. This means when it's actuated at low speed, when you change gears, it offers less resistance, and at high speed, descending through rough terrain, it effectively calms the chain. Next, he says the derailleur system is deconstructed into parts. As a whole, it's about the same weight as SRAM XO, but the assembly that hangs on the wheel is 300 grams lighter. quite a difference where it counts. And lastly, he says, the guy is clearly not a designer. I am. And the aesthetics of the thing is really X9 inspired, but it's 100% custom. Keep up the good work.
Yeah,
I will say that on this more like finished version that we looked at last week, it definitely looked X9 inspired. But if you go back to the prototype one, which I haven't gone back and looked at, but I do remember it looked much more like it was parts off of an X9 derailleur, like off the whatever, like 9 or 10 speed. I think the 9 speed one was what I looked at.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think it's cool. I think it has potential. We made fun of the cable routing, but that's just such a minor, silly thing. It's really not that big a deal. It can obviously be remedied. What if we put this bike together with the other one?
I'm pretty sure that you would commit something that is a war crime as described by the Geneva Convention.
So I think we need to combine these two. We need to get these two folks together. We need to get the LOL katana meets the...
We need to lock them in a room with a bunch of cocaine and see what comes out.
I think that would be sick.
So I'm looking at the pictures from the 2021 release of just the prototype drivetrain, so the LOL Supra drive, and that is definitely a fucked up derailleur. Like, it's... Who the fuck does that? It should be illegal that if you click on a picture, the picture always gets bigger. Unlike this article in Pink Bike, where I click on this picture and it shows me a smaller fucking picture. Yeah, I mean, if you look at the prototype, that definitely looks like it's parts off of another derailleur. But yeah, like the one that's actually on a bike, that's on the Katana, definitely looks like it was made out of real parts. Like they made parts for it. They didn't just take apart something else and put it back together.
All right.
Is that all we have to say about his? And yeah, that's, I mean, how the derailleur works is very interesting. And I would like to see somewhat of a more technical article than what we,
I mean, here's the thing. If someone brought one by the shop, I'd 100% go pedal it around.
Oh yeah, definitely. All right, Kenny, where's your segue?
I don't have a segue. I'm just going to talk about one last product.
All right.
So we've talked about my Foompa adventures in the past, and just saying that Foompas are becoming more popular. I said way back when I rode my first e-bike, I'm like, these are pretty cool, and I'm going to see these getting pretty popular, and I'm probably going to continue to ride them. And I think that has come to fruition, and I think e-bikes have gotten pretty popular. And when I got my little electric Foompa pump, that was more money than I'd like to talk about. It is actually pretty cool and pretty useful. I don't get that many flats, so I don't get to use that often. But just in general, these small, compact, high-quality pumps, whether it's for a car or motorcycle or bicycle, are pretty cool, and I think they're here to stay. So I think the Foompa really kicked it off, and there's a ton of other ones to choose from. Silka makes one now. I'm looking at the Muck Off one that just came out. There is a Highline brand. There is, there's two or three others that are like fairly well-known brands as well. So anyway, if you're curious about those things, there's a bunch to choose from and they're pretty neat. That's it.
You know, what I would love to see is someone like Foompa to come in and give us that really ridiculous Envy set it and forget it gauge. Do you remember that?
The one that you mount on the wall?
Yes.
What about it?
It'd be really cool to see one of these brands come in and give us, because they have them set to stop pumping at a certain pressure. It'd be really cool if they came out with a gauge or like a something you could run in line on like a hose, like for a shop, and then you could change the max pressure on the fly. So let's say that I'm, again, building those rock hoppers all day and I want to run them at 35, right? Then I could just set it to 35 and just when it stops flowing, it's at 35 and I could just do that all day.
It's a pretty good idea. Maybe I'll do that. So all you need to do is you basically put one of these things in line. It's got two, you know, industrial air compressor, you know, the IM fittings, and it goes in line.
Yep.
It goes like before your gun, your whatever inflator you're choosing. And mm-hmm. that way you just hold down the trigger and it shuts it off. That'd be pretty cool.
And what I would love to see instead of a button would be, like, because this would really just need, no, it wouldn't even need a button. You would only need one knob. You wouldn't need a button. Just when the knob gets turned, it turns on, and then you literally just spin a dial for more or less, and then it would auto shut off within, you know, 5 minutes or something.
I think it could be cool.
All right. Are we ready to read patrons and wrap it up?
Sure.
Sure.
I mean, I don't know if you guys were done talking, but there was a long pause and I'm kind of, you know.
She's ready.
I'm ready.
Old Spurt Reynolds.
Old Spurt Reynolds is on those nerve pain meds and ready to go talk to the Hat Man. All right. So our patrons at $10 a month or more. We've got Zozo. Wendy's nuggets taste like they came out of her ass. Tom P. bleaches his stink wrinkle. Tom's P. Timothy. Ty Lover. Ty. Tennessee Zach. Taylor Zwift. Taperbore Pro. Skunk in your trap. Samuel. Ryan. Ride time extended.
Pork chop sandwiches.
Noah. My pal Dal. MTV shenanigans.
Mike Jones.
Matt's formerly pretty hands.
That was a good one.
R.I.P. Leland. Josh. Josh. Jim, the fucked up trike guy. JC, Jared, Jake D. I sold a bike to TPC and got stabbed 3 out of 5. Would sell again. Holden, 2 dicks. Green Giant, Gordon, fuck bike rumors, shitty website. Freel Ippin.
Freel Ippin?
Yeah. Frank the Tank, Eric, Captain Fickle, Cam Irish 1, Bill, Bearded Bag O' Dicks, Barrel of Dicks, Anus, Anus, Balls, Anus, Balls, AJ, Aaron, underscore, at $11.11 per month, we've got brought to you by taking gabapentin and Benadryl to see the Hat Man. $14 Australian, we've got Patamelon Disco, Dean at $16.50 Australian, and at $20 a month, we've got Scott, Poop Wrench, My Neck, My Back, Lick My Pussy, and My Crack, Joe, Harley at 30, Troy at 31, and Six Pack Outdoors, Put My Thing Down, Flip It, and Reverse It, at Fitty.
Shut her down.
Shut her down.
Time to shut her down.
Yeah, I think that we say that before patrons. After patrons, you just say goodnight.
No, you usually say shut her down sometime between patrons and goodnight.
Do I really? Okay, I thought it was before patrons. Yeah.
I think it's like anything else, and you're like, shut her down.
All right, shut her down.
All right, you heard the man. Thank you all for listening, and good night.
My fingers smell like the inside of a squirrel.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along show.
There's some shit coming out of your brake pads.